Solitaire Rose Radio, Episode 51, Doctor Who Season 9, Discussion and Wrap-Up with my niece, Mindy Engel. I did this last year. My niece is a fan of Doctor Who. I am a fan of Doctor Who, and I thought it was a lot of fun for us to get together and talk about the Doctor. However, she is in a new location, so there were technical issues. Not as bad as when Joe was in Alaska all those years ago, but they got bad. So there was a lot of work that needed to be done to clean up the audio. Hopefully you'll be able to enjoy it. And without wasting any more time, here we go. We're doing it again. We did this last year, and I thought it was a lot of fun because we talk about all sorts of things on the main podcast. We talk comics and books and nerdy stuff and conventions and everything. But here on the solo podcast, I mostly go over comic creators and comic book history, and then I interview people, but I don't really get into TV. And with adding a fourth podcast, I don't know if I'm ever going to have time to watch TV again. But I have my niece here on the line to discuss Doctor Who, a show we have in common. And we actually got to hang out for a brief time this summer. Well, what was this party on a dirt road that I had to brave a frightening bridge to go to?
Oh, what was the frightening bridge?
we came one way, and there was a bridge that really wasn't a bridge. It looked more like they just kind of piled up a bunch of dirt on top of a big metal tube.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that. I don't doubt that that's around here somewhere.
And a creek went through it, and it looked like if we got a really good rain, there'd be no more bridge.
Yeah, we're kind of out here.
But that's where Google told me to drive.
Of course it would.
So you done got married.
I did.
And was it everything you hoped it would be?
I don't know. That's a difficult question. I keep telling people that it, I'm glad that it's over.
Okay. And of course, everything's different now that you're married, right?
Yeah. No, not really.
The
only thing is now I get pissed off when we get mail that says Mr. and Mrs. David Engel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because your name isn't on there.
No, I don't get a name anymore now that I'm married.
Well. Welcome to Merca.
Yeah. And I tried to keep my wedding as feminist as possible, and still you can't get away from it.
See, to me, it just seemed like kind of, it didn't seem like a wedding that was much different from many others.
No.
It hit all the same theme, except the actual ceremony itself was really short.
Mm-hmm.
As was the time that people actually danced to the music. It was like, okay, there's 5 songs and we're done.
Yeah, everybody got really tired really fast. I think I played too many dance songs in a row.
I think the thing that I enjoyed was as the music started playing, I actually leaned over to my parents and went, I'm going to bet that out of all of the songs they play, I will not know 5 of them. And I think after 3 hours, I was able to recognize 9.
Oh, well, good.
So there you go. But we're not here to talk about the wedding, or as I called it on the podcast, the weddin'. Because once you get down to a certain, once you get far enough away from a city, you have to drop your G's.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about our favorite doctor. Them. Yes. And it was Missouri. Sorry, as a Yankee, I tend to Well, let's just say that I found it fascinating that there were three kinds of billboards as you drive through Missouri. Three and three only. Fireworks, churches, and strip clubs.
Yes.
Are there any other businesses? Well, there's the coffee shop that you work at.
Yes, and Mark Twain, everything.
Yes.
Everything is Mark.
In lovely Hannibal, Missouri, which actually looks like it would be fun to play tourist in, but I did not have time. We are going to discuss our favorite doctor. Well, my favorite doctor. Is he your favorite doctor? Is he your favorite?
The doctor as a whole character or 12 in general?
Well, the doctor as a character in total.
In total, yes. He is my favorite doctor.
Okay. We might as well start. Who is your favorite of the 12 doctors?
David Tennant. Hands down. Don't even have to think about it. I am a 10 fangirl.
Was he your first?
No.
So you did watch the Christopher Eccleston stuff?
Yes. I started with Christopher Eccleston.
See, for me, my favorite is always going to be Tom Baker, because I've talked on the podcast before. I didn't even see Doctor Who before I knew about the character, because Marvel was publishing comics of the character. And I actually read much more of the comic than actually watched the show until I was able to get cable when I moved to Minnesota. So the Tom Baker in the comic is my favorite Doctor. But I think we both came to the conclusion that the previous season was kind of a mix. We're going to go through this season to see what we think of it.
Okay.
And the first episode was called The Magician's Apprentice. And I remember for most of these, I was able to watch them the night they were on. Except, let's see, this one was in September. Yes, I was able to see this one the night it was on, I believe. No, this was the wedding, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, the 26th, yeah.
Yeah. So you made me wait.
Yes.
But I do remember the first 5 minutes of the episode, I actually messaged one of my friends and went, all right, we have Davros, we have Daleks, we have Missy, and we've just gone to the opening credits. This is the best episode ever. We started with a two-parter. There were a lot of two-parters. And we actually started with the initial war. Well, we start off on the home planet of the Daleks, where the doctor is charged with saving a young boy. And then we go to modern-day Earth. Missy and Clara spend some time together. But really, this was very much a Missy, Clara, and the doctor versus Davros. Almost a sort of classic Doctor Who setup. And it was the first of a two-parter. It also sort of set the tone in that Clara appeared to die at the end of the episode, which it happened a lot this season. And I thought it was an excellent kickoff for this season because it brought in a whole bunch of the past, but also set up a dilemma for the doctor in that we find out that this young boy grows up to be Davros. So should the doctor save this young boy who's going to create the Daleks and cause untold destruction across the universe or not? Really, I thought it was a really good setup. What was your opinion of the first episode of the season?
I liked it. It was. I'm not really sure. the setup in itself was, it was a good setup. And I really like any time Davros is part of the story, quite honestly.
Now, one of the things that was going on at the same
for
time,
the classic,
they were running a lot of the Tom Baker episodes on weekday mornings. First one they showed was Genesis of the Daleks.
Mm-hmm.
And this one harkened back, even using dialogue from that original episode. So the next episode, this one was called The Magician's Apprentice, and the next one was The Witch's Familiar. So we get to, it's, it opens letting us know that Clara and Missy were not killed by the Daleks. They were just teleported away. Missy explains that they managed to escape using energy fired from the Daleks' weapons to teleport themselves away. And the Doctor, however, believes Clara is dead. And here we get weird. Because through the story, Clara gets put into a Dalek.
Yes.
And we learn that no matter what she says or does, it comes out with, you know, with the Dalek destroy, kill, destroy, kill, destroy, kill. Meanwhile, the Doctor has taken Davros out of his life support chair and uses it to confront the Supreme Dalek because he's within the wheelchair's force field. So we're getting kind of a switch, and we're also showing more of this Doctor's, I don't want to call it ruthlessness, but his ability to almost use violence, whereas previous Doctors have not been as prone to use violence. They would think things through. And I thought it was interesting that the current Doctor will turn to violence from time to time if he's provoked enough. Although that changes as we go on through the season. I really liked Clara in the Dalek, kind of with her trying to explain what's going on, but it would come out as exterminate, destroy, etc., etc. However, yeah. By the end of the episode, we may have seen a major change in the Daleks.
Right, with her being able to get the word mercy through.
Yes. Then we go back. The Doctor goes back to where he had left Davros to be killed. And he saves him, showing that, showing mercy. So in a way, using the time travel thing to, maybe the Doctor, in doing that, has changed the Daleks. Of course, you know, the Daleks can't ever become good because they're the iconic villain. There was also the one thing that the internet went crazy about, and that is the Doctor no longer has a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah. My brother was a little weirded out by that, too.
What was your reaction to the change?
I understand why they did it. The sonic screwdriver has become a major plot device. It has become the tool for everything, except wood, apparently. But he's always able to get himself out of every jam with the sonic screwdriver, and so I get why they took it away. In my opinion, the sonic sunglasses are not the most appropriate substitute. I think I would have preferred nothing at all.
Okay.
To the sonic sunglasses. Which I'm fine with, I don't see a purpose.
I think part of it was to kind of shake things up. And one of the things I find interesting is we're in the 9th season of Doctor Who, although it doesn't feel like it. When you look at other series that are in their 9th season,
yeah,
they're exhausted. They're tired. Mm-hmm. They're reusing the old jokes. Their formula is, you know, the X-Files. The 9th season of the X-Files was probably the least watchable thing ever on television. But Doctor Who, this is the 9th season in the modern era, and they shook things up a lot, which I think they needed to do. Again, I liked, for me, the essence of drama is putting a character in a situation where he has to make a choice, because that choice defines the character.
Mm-hmm.
And in putting the Doctor in the situation where he could save or kill Davros, you're setting the tone and you're defining the character. Any other opinion on this episode?
I I enjoyed it. It was a lot of, well, doctor, they were both doing a lot of trickery, which I think is pretty essential to Time Lords.
Yes.
So that's always fun.
And there was a lot of that sort of thing going on through the whole season.
Mm.
Whereas the Doctor was willing to, you know, he was willing to kick some ass. He also was wanting to outthink his opponents. It's almost as if he wanted to use every arrow in that quiver this season. The next episode was Under the Lake, which was set in the future. It was set actually in the year 2019, and it was a haunted space station story. Let's see, I'll read up here. In 2019, an underwater base on Earth, a joint military-industrial team discovers an alien vessel among the ruins of a long-submerged town. Bringing the vessel aboard with remote drones, they find it empty, one of its two power cells missing, and four strange glyphs carved into the stark white wall. Suddenly, the ship's engine comes to life, and the team's commander is killed when pushing another out of the way of the exhaust. Later, the remaining team encounter Morin and an alien being dressed as a mortician, both ghost-like in appearance, and silently chanting words at the team as they attack them. I thought this and the next episode were a nice puzzle story.
Yeah.
It's set up, okay, here's the situation. We've got all this stuff going on. All of the clues are there. Can you put them together? But the one thing this episode kind of pointed out to me was Clara's not going to have a life outside the Doctor this season.
Oh, no.
In previous seasons, we got to see her as a teacher and her in her relationship. And basically the stuff she did when she wasn't with the Doctor. This was a very Doctor-focused season where he would pop up, grab her, and they would go do stuff. And I think that for all of the good this season was, to me, you really missed out on that. And I wanted to see Clara's life when it wasn't defined by being with someone else. And we really didn't get that.
No, well, the only time that we've really seen her life outside of the Doctor anyway was when she was with Danny.
Right. Well, they had episodes set around her life in the school or doing other things. I forget what the antagonist was, but there was the one episode set in the school that was almost like a sitcom where the Doctor was pretending to be other people.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, but this, there was just nothing of her outside of the time travel.
Mm-mm.
Your reaction to this, and, you know, we'll just combine these two because it was a very puzzle-based episode. Was there anything that jumped out at you that you liked or disliked about this episode?
Not necessarily. I mean, these, I enjoy the standalone episodes where it's not like an overarching storyline every now and then within the seasons, if they're done well. And I think these were done well.
The other thing I liked about it was, as someone who likes writing, both writing and reading, I liked the structure of the episode, where at the beginning you had all the clues, but you had to go through the story as the Doctor's figuring out what he needs to do.
Yeah.
And, of course, the cliffhanger of, oh, my gosh, the Doctor is dead. We're getting these cliffhangers where either the Doctor or Clara has been killed. And unlike The Walking Dead, they don't cheat. They just go, the Doctor's a ghost. Or, ooh, Clara's been eradicated by the Daleks. And then in the next part, we go, oh, okay, that's why it seemed that way. Rather than, oh, we're going to make it look like this character died and we're not going to show him for four or five episodes. And then, oh, yeah, he got away by some weird bunch of circumstances that really can't be explained. Can you tell I'm still a little mad about the whole the whole thing on Walking Dead where they made it look like a character had died, and then when they finally showed that he didn't, it was such a cheat.
Oh yeah, I've heard about that.
The next two-parter, a lot of two-parters this season, The Girl Who Died. And we start in a little Viking village. The episode is set in a little Viking village, and the gods have shown up to take the greatest warriors. And everybody's cheering and happy, and the doctor realizes, A, they aren't gods, and B, they weren't taken to Valhalla. They were taken by the gods to be killed. And the gods aren't really gods. Clara is taken with the warriors, and the male Vikings are killed and drained of their adrenaline and testosterone, but Claire and Isildur are spared. They return back to the town and are given a very short time to get the people who are left, who aren't warriors and aren't fighters, ready to fight the gods. And while the premise has tones of menace and fear, there was a lot of comedy in this episode, which I think was needed after the previous four episodes.
Yeah. I enjoyed this one. I think I was a little worried because when you get someone with as much nerd cred as Maisie Williams, you know, you really need to do whatever character she's playing justice.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed her character, and I enjoyed the episode. To me, it was the doctor had a lot of empathy and showed a lot of empathy in this episode. And one of the main traits of the doctor that I like.
We also have the doctor, in a way, screwing up.
Yes.
And this is kind of the beginning of the arc for the season. I know that you said you like the standalone episodes. I like the fact that the arc for the season kind of stayed in the background for the whole time, just kind of poking its head out a little bit. Much like with Bad Wolf, where it's, okay, we're getting bits and pieces here and there, but it's not like when Buffy the Vampire Slayer would do it where, oh my God, this is the 10th episode where we're dealing with the big bad guy. And I also like the fact that the doctor said, I may have done something bad here. We often get stories where the doctor says, I can't tamper with things. I can't tamper with things. I can't tamper with things. Oh, I guess I tamper with things.
He breaks that rule quite a few times.
But rarely do we see consequences from it. And this season we're going to see that there are consequences from it, which I actually really liked.
I do too. I think that sort of went away with 11, whereas I feel like every decision that 10 ever made, he suffered a consequence for. So it's pretty much that's all 10's run was just him suffering.
Well, there's the video on YouTube that I've used a few times as a comment where it's, okay, here's David Tennant saying I'm sorry for 5 minutes.
Well, he brought about his own regeneration by, you know, screwing up and tampering with things when he, when was that? That was the Christmas invasion.
Yes.
With Harriet Jones when he, makes her not prime minister anymore, and then that brings in Harold Saxon. So he suffered a lot of consequences for meddling when he shouldn't have. And 11, not so much. So I was glad to see that there were consequences with 12.
The other thing I really liked was it brought back the playfulness of this doctor.
Yes.
The previous episodes had been very, very serious and very weighty episodes. And this one brought back more of the lighter touch and the fun. And it's written by the man you hate. Well, co-written by the man you hate.
I like him as a writer, not as a showrunner.
Okay.
He's very good at individual episodes. And coming up with monsters. And that's what I think he should stick to.
Okay. The next episode actually plays off of the end of this episode, and it is The Woman Who Lived. The episode is set in England, 1651, featuring a highwayman revealed to be I will butcher this name. Esildur? Now going by the name of Me, and under the alias of The Nightmare. And the doctor is brought, the doctor is shown up to find an alien artifact. Again, we had where he said he may have made a huge mistake. Now in this episode, we get to see the consequences of being immortal, which are very different from the consequences that other immortals in the series have dealt with. And that is, her brain can't hold all the memories anymore. And that's what I really liked about it. Because as one of the things you learn as you get older is memories become fuzzier and fuzzier. Well, she's 800 years old. She can't remember anymore. To the point where she can't really remember her name anymore. And this was also another, while there was some heavy stuff, there was also some very light humor in the episode. Any thoughts on this one?
This was a good one. I never really thought about her not being able to remember things. So, and then I think it sort of shocked the doctor to learn how cold she had become because she couldn't remember things, like the loss of empathy and, I mean, she pretty much just became a sociopath with the thrill seeking and everything. And I don't think that was something that he was expecting.
And it also showed, again, the fallibility of his decisions when he does actually mess with time and mess with what should happen. We also get this feeling that they're friends and enemies and not in that frenemy thing, but in that, if what they want, if what both of them want is the same thing, they're going to work together. But she's not happy that he has made her immortal.
No. No, she's not. Oh, well, I was just going to say, and she tells him that she's going to look after the people who have suffered consequences from his actions.
Yes. Which I, again, they're planting a seed to a future episode, but I thought it was a really interesting idea. Because now we're getting more and more people who know the doctor through the years. So they're characters that can show up in any place. Almost like River Song, but different. Or like Captain Jack, but different. Or the Master, but different. Now the doctor's got all of these sort of mirror images of himself that may or may not be at cross purposes with him. And the other thing that I now just sort of thinking of, there were a few seasons ago, they did a thing where the doctor's history was erased from certain databases and stuff. And it seems like, well, now rather than all of creation knowing him, you have a smaller number of people who know him, but they know him much, much better. The next episode was another two-parter. It was almost like every episode was a two-parter. Was the Zygon invasion, which followed up on the 50th anniversary episode, in that the truce between humans and Zygons has fallen apart. And I think the thing that kind of weirded me out the most was that Osgood's alive. The flame and blue hell was, and I remember watching this first episode going, no, did I miss something?
I don't know. I've kind of figured, like, any time in Doctor Who, somebody just pops back up. It's like, oh, well, there they are.
I did love that when Missy came back, they didn't even bother to explain it. And she said, oh, you know, this sort of thing happens all the time. It's like, I'm not even going to bother with it. You know I'm coming back, so just
yeah, pretty much. Deal just... with it. And I was just so happy because that was a big thread that was left hanging in the 50th that I had been wondering about for a long time. What in the world happened to the Zygons?
Well, the peace treaty has now fallen apart, and we have a group of hillbilly Zygons down in Arizona. And since this is a British show, I could not stop laughing at that. I thought that that is how the rest of the world sees us.
Yeah, probably.
In Truth or Consequences, Arizona. No, I'm sorry. Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, not Arizona, New Mexico. And was this one actually filmed in the U.S.? Because I know they made a big deal when they came to the U.S. under Matt Smith, but I don't remember hearing anything about them coming to the U.S.
Oh, I didn't hear anything about it either.
Okay, so it was probably someplace in England or, you know, that they made look like it. This one was, again, end of the episode, it looks like the Doctor's plane has been blown up. We find out the Doctor is the president of the Earth. And he's got an awesome plane.
Yeah.
And one of the things I liked is the fact that he's president of the Earth did not faze him at all. He just accepted it and moved on. There was a nice creepiness to the episode. There was a nice callback to the 50th anniversary and sort of, all right, again, this is what the Doctor did. Here are the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the next episode, we find out, and I like that they left it ambiguous, this, what happened in this episode may have happened over and over and over and over because there's memory wiping involved.
Yes.
And we are back to having two Osgoods. And I like the fact that she wouldn't tell the Doctor which one was which. Because one was a Zygon and one was a human, and we don't know which is which. And she wouldn't share with the Doctor. So now someone's keeping secrets. Someone in UNIT is keeping secrets from him.
Which, in all honesty, is probably for the best.
Yes. But they also, in doing that... How do you know this is the only time it's happened? Set us up for what's coming later. And again, Clara just seems to be there.
Yeah.
And because of that, one of the things that I love about the writing are the phrases the Doctor uses to describe how he cares for Clara. However, in the stories themselves, I don't feel it. Is that just me, or does it feel like the Doctor cares about her because in the script he's got great lines about how he cares for her?
Yeah, it does seem that it's written. There's not a lot of, well, we don't see them by themselves a whole lot. There's not a lot of them in the TARDIS. There's not a lot of them going on, I don't know, like, any private moments in any of their adventures, I guess. They're constantly surrounded by other people. They're constantly tackling something, or they're separated. So I'm not sure. It is a bit odd.
And I had heard that Clara was not going to be in this season, and then they changed their minds at the last minute.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In a lot of ways, it's almost like she was generic companion.
An afterthought.
Season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because in earlier seasons, they put a lot of work into her, almost to the point where she never became as annoying as Donna to me, because I hated the Donna character with such a passion. And I know that I'm the only person who does. But, oh my God. The whole time she's smarter than the Doctor. She's better than the Doctor. She becomes the Doctor. Clara became in some ways kind of almost like a sonic screwdriver in that, oh my gosh, I know how to solve this.
Yeah. I always felt that way about River, so I understand where you're coming from about it.
Well, River, they gave a reason for it because she's also a time traveler.
Yeah.
Clara was a school teacher who just happened to have weird shit happen to her. And what I'm hoping is the next companion they bring in is someone who doesn't know everything.
Yeah, that's becoming a trend in, I think, with a lot of the, even the one-off characters.
Yes. And the reason Rose worked so well, especially in the first two seasons, she didn't know anything, so she was kind of the viewer substitute. And the companion's always been that. The doctor has to explain things to the companion in order to explain it to us, the viewer. So if the companion knows everything, it creates a distance between us and what's going on. Now, I never felt that distance, but I did always feel like, well, Clara's a companion because she's a companion, but she doesn't bring anything to the story other than just being there.
Yeah.
The next episode was the one episode this season I did not like in any way, shape, or form, and that is, well, there was one thing I liked about it, and that is Sleep No More, which was a found footage story, which are really hard for me to like.
Yeah, they are.
And this one just felt confusing rather than interesting.
I think it had a good premise and it didn't really follow through with what it was trying to do.
I loved the antagonist. I loved the sleep creatures.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see them in a story that makes sense.
Oh, and I'm trying to think. It reminded me of a Doctor Who audiobook that I have. what is it called? Dead Air.
Okay.
And that's a found footage, but it's audio, and it's the Doctor, and it's like the Doctor is telling the story. It's from a first-person perspective, and he's telling the story to you, and which is something they haven't done with the audiobooks that I've listened to before, and it was really interesting. So this reminded me of that, but it didn't really work the same. I wouldn't say it was a bad episode, but...
And maybe it's because I've seen so many terrible found footage movies. I can count on one hand and still have fingers left to wave at people, the ones I've enjoyed.
Yeah.
Because most of them just seem like, they seem like the old trope of you're walking in the spooky house and all of a sudden the cat jumps out at you. And most found footage movies just feel like that all the time. And then we had, at the end, we find out that the narrator of the footage was unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm happy that they tried something different, but I don't think the experiment worked, especially not for me.
I think every show nowadays that's like that has one of these episodes, though. So, they got it out of their system. They did it.
I don't mind when somebody does an experimental episode. Matter of fact, one of my favorite episodes of the series Breaking Bad is their bottle episode, where the entire episode is in the meth lab, and there's a fly that you can't get rid of. My favorite show right now, even though it's been off the air for a few months and has been canceled three times, Community, often does these experimental episodes. So I don't think the experimental thing is bad. I just don't think that this one, for me, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get the final three episodes of the season, which all blended together into one long story. The first one was Face the Raven, where the Doctor and Clara find a hidden city in modern London. Well, it's just more of an alley. Rigsby contacts Clara through the TARDIS's phone, asking her and the Doctor for help. They arrive at Rigsby's flat in London, finding he has settled down with a wife and a newborn daughter and has no idea the origin of the tattoo on the back of his neck that is counting down towards zero. He has no memory of the previous day's events. His mobile phone is cracked and data from the previous day wiped. The Doctor finds that he has had contact with aliens in the last day and is due to die when the countdown of the tattoo reaches zero. The Doctor feels there's nothing they can do. Clara insists that they try. They assume the presence of aliens hiding in London. They look for a trap street where they might be hiding. They eventually come across it, aided by a flood of memories from Rigsby, recalls once the TARDIS is able to restore the data on his mobile. And here we have Isildur again, still going by the name Me, has gathered together these aliens and is hiding them, and they've created their own culture. And we find out that Rigsby has committed a crime. Clara, thinking she's ever so clever, decides to take his crime upon her, knowing that because she didn't do it, she will kind of be saved, because that's the sort of thing the Doctor would do. And we find out that that may not have been the best choice. So you've got a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have the ticking clock, of course, but you've got a murder mystery, and you're setting up for Clara's exit from the series in a lot of ways. I liked the murder mystery. I liked the Doctor solving the murder mystery. I think, while I understand what they did with Clara, it almost, in a way, points to one of the bad tropes of the series, which is, everybody assumes the Doctor will be able to save everyone because he always does. Except when he can't.
Well, and I think it was Clara's often trying to make decisions without the Doctor as he would. And I think in most cases it's worked out well for her, which is a little unrealistic for me. So I think this not working out quite so well was a little bit more realistic.
And I also like that the Doctor was set in a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And normally the episode is, how's the Doctor going to get out of the trap? He couldn't get out of the trap. No matter how clever he was, no matter what anybody did, the trap was set and there was no way out for him. And in a lot of ways, I spent a lot of the episodes going, all right, who's behind this? Who's behind this? Who's behind this? And we end with Clara dead and the Doctor gone. There's your cliffhanger. However, because in previous episodes, you go into it thinking, you know, after the cliffhanger, you spend the week going, all right, how's he gonna save Clara from this? And then the next episode, Heaven Sent, probably my favorite episode of the season, maybe one of my favorite episodes of the series. The Doctor has been trapped in a strange waterlocked castle and is pursued by a shrouded creature that is trying to kill him.
It's very psychological.
Yes.
Very cerebral.
And a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have enjoyed the Doctor Who puzzle episodes because you're trying to solve it as the Doctor does. But we also learn something about how the Doctor is able to solve these puzzles. In a brilliant bit, you watch Sherlock, right?
Yes.
The Doctor has a mind palace, just like Sherlock does. Stephen Moffat must really like the idea of a mind palace.
I think that he does. That must be where he gets his ideas from.
The other thing I liked about this episode, it was a time loop story. that you didn't realize was a time loop story until very late in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Many science fiction series and even Community have done time loop episodes. There was a very famous Star Trek The Next Generation where the ship would be destroyed right before each commercial break. Then you come back from the commercial break and it would start up again. It would be, oh, that's how this episode started. And there may be some differences, but you would get to the same result until they figured out how to break that time loop. In this one, I didn't realize how he had broke the time loop until right at the revelation moment. So they were able to really draw you in and keep you sort of confused and not knowing even as you're watching the Doctor figure it out.
Yeah, I didn't figure it out until he did.
And then there are a lot of revelations in the next episode, but you get the one thing I liked was when the Doctor does figure it out, he realizes he almost has all the time in the world. So the TARDIS is behind this sort of unbreakable crystal that will take endless years to wear through. And he figures out that's what he has to do in order to break this down. We also get revelations through the episode of almost tying up a lot of the plot lines from the past few years. And there were rumors that this was going to be the last season Stephen Moffat would do.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, it really felt like, okay, he's tying everything up now. Sort of clearing the deck for whoever's going to be running the show next. Very clever episode, very well written. And when you think about the fact that it was pretty much all Peter Capaldi, not interacting with anybody else, it was just him. That had to be hard work. That had to be hard for him to carry this episode. And then at the end, you get a cliffhanger where nobody died.
No. I think this is the only one.
Yes. And the cliffhanger is, he is on Gallifrey. He has found Gallifrey. Which, I gotta be honest, I thought they would be looking for Gallifrey for much, much longer and in a much different way.
Yeah, I was surprised.
The next episode was the season finale. Well, unless you count the Christmas episode. This one was Heaven Sent. This one is Hell Bent. And the description of the episode was, in Nevada, the Doctor enters a diner and encounters a waitress physically identical to Clara. He begins to tell a story about Clara. Neither appears to recognize the other. As the Doctor narrates, the episode flashes back to Gallifrey, where the Doctor has escaped from the confession dial. So in a lot of ways, he was keeping himself prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
Setting off the cloister bells in the city that alert the Time Lord President, the High Council, and the Sisters of Karn that the Doctor has returned. Now, after the previous episode where the Doctor did all the talking, the first 15 minutes of this episode, he was silent. And it was really our first encounter with Gallifrey in the modern era other than the 50th anniversary episode. Can you tell I'm a comic nerd? So having seen a lot of Gallifrey in the original series, what was your impression of Gallifrey in the modern series?
Well, we got a little bit of Gallifrey in, what was it, The End of Time? I think. And so I was always wondering why he wanted them to come back, because they didn't seem...
Yeah, in the original series, Gallifrey, the other Time Lords, were dead.
Yeah, right?
And you understood why he took off.
Yeah. And they still seem to be dicks.
Yes. Although the doctor has a lot of power, we've learned. Because he's able to get the High Council to do pretty much what he wants them to do.
Yes.
And we get a revelation that he was in the confession dial for 4 billion years.
Yeah.
That's billion with a B.
Now we're never going to know how old he is. It's just gone. It's...
Well, remember, he didn't age that much there because he kept being destroyed and recreated.
Yeah.
So we got that going for us. The other thing is that, yes, the doctor does save Clara in a way. He tricks the Time Lords into allowing him to pluck Clara from the seconds before she dies.
Mm-hmm.
And he is looking for a way to save her. And the entire previous episode and this one is all about saving Clara. All of the stuff he went through in the previous episode, all of the stuff he's going through here, he has this elaborate plan because he feels that if he plucks her out of time and then escapes from Gallifrey, she will be alive again. Because of, you know, okay, it's magic. They have a scientific explanation, but now it's magic.
Yeah.
It's rules that, you know, they made up in order to set up what's going on.
Well, it's sci-fi fantasy.
Yes. But there is a sequence where he's putting together the last parts of the plan. And Clara has been told that he spent 4 billion years in the confession dial in order to save her. And I'm just going to read it from the script. Clara gives her such a stare, turns back to the doctor. Clara, turning to the doctor. 4.5 billion years. The doctor, if she says so. Clara, why would you even do that? I was dead already. I was dead and gone. And doctor, you were in hell. Why would you do that to yourself? And this is in the actual script. On the doctor, who looks faintly perplexed, a frown of almost childish puzzlement, like he doesn't understand why anyone would ask that question. The doctor, I had a duty of care. Now, that goes back to the previous season, where Clara goes, I betrayed you, I destroyed everything, why did you...
Yeah.
And he says, do you think I care for you so little that would matter to me? And the frustrating thing to me is these are beautiful, beautiful sentences, brilliantly written for a character that up until these points, we don't feel that connection.
I was going to say.
And if just this dialogue could do it, it would, but it almost like these moments exist in a vacuum. I could see both of the doctors who were with Rose saying something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Matt Smith saying this about Amy Pond.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that connection between these two.
No, and I didn't even get it with her in 11. I don't know. I don't know if it's, we haven't, they just haven't fleshed out her character as much as they should have, or what it is.
And it, like you, I can't put my finger on why. And I think it was because when Clara first showed up, she was a gimmick.
Yes.
And because she started as a gimmick, we never really felt that sense of, like with Rose, oh my gosh, I get to go on these great adventures. Or even, you know, previous series, Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
Sarah Jane was always, you know, the plucky girl who's there to have an adventure and wants to explore. Clara seems to do things because she's written to do them rather than it coming out of her character.
Right. Her personality changes from one episode to the next.
Yes. And we're not really grounded with her. Yeah, mm-hmm. She's a school teacher and she had a boyfriend who died. And that's all we really know about her. And I think one of the things that they did with Rose that made her feel more real is we got to know her life outside of the doctor.
Yes, and even before.
Donna, again, we knew her life outside of the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Pond, we knew her life outside of the doctor. With Clara, we don't know her life outside of the doctor, really. And I don't know if that's the fault of the writing team or just the way that they had to create the stories for this season. But I never felt emotionally connected to Clara. I thought she was very cute, but I didn't care.
Well, it's a shame because I think Jenna Coleman's, I think she has the capability to make us care more about the character. It's just not there.
Right. And I do think the ending, which we'll talk about, hey, you remember how I said in the introduction there are going to be spoilers? Guess what? Here's another one. We get to where the doctor has realized that what they're going to have to do, he's going to have to erase Clara's memory, and they can't see each other again. However, we turn that on its head so that it's not exactly like Donna, and instead they're going to both hold a device, and one of them is going to have the other erased from their memory. And in a nice twist, the doctor has Clara erased from his memory. And after he leaves the diner, we find out that the diner is a TARDIS. And the, quote, Time Lord, unquote, is a Sildur. Or me.
Yeah.
And now we're going to have these two women wandering around the universe in comic books and novels and radio plays. I doubt we'll ever see them in the series again unless we get to anniversaries or things like that. But I liked that ending. Because now Clara's at least interesting. She's dead, but alive.
Yeah.
And we have an immortal human who's almost kind of yet another mirror image of the doctor. I hope they don't make her into the master where she shows up, you know, every 2-3 seasons and they have, you know, they have a clash because we've got the master. We don't need another one. But I like that they're kind of populating the Doctor Who universe a little bit more.
Well, I was starting to wonder, and I can't remember, did Ashildur ever use that other immortality, whatever it was, that the Doctor gave her?
I don't know. I know that they touched on it a few times. That she still had it because the doctor asked her, you know, why didn't you use it for your husband or one of your children? And she kind of brushed it aside. But I don't know as they did use it.
So I was kind of wondering if anything was going to happen with Clara and that, and then nothing ever did. So I'm not sure.
Well, to the internet.
No, I don't think it was either.
If we're wrong, please email me and let me know. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. And that was the season finale, and I thought it was a very good season. I thought it was well put together. We did have a Christmas episode. The Husbands of River Song. Again, when they showed it on BBC America, Stephen Moffat said, I thought this was going to be my last episode, so I wanted to use River Song one last time and wrap up her storyline. What I really enjoyed about this was it was another episode with a lot of humor in it.
Yeah, it was, there was a lot of humor in this one.
And a lot of fun ideas, a lot of silliness, but also we had another one of those sequences where Moffat shows that he can write some brilliant, brilliant dialogue where River is talking about the doctor to the doctor. And River says, you know, of course I love him, but it's like loving a sunset. It can never love you back. And if you know, River Song has been one of my favorite characters, even though there are times she's used poorly, but I like the fact that she's almost Indiana Jones-ish. And it rushes in and out. Still, the marriage between her and the doctor doesn't quite work in my head because it's like, oh, we're married. Yeah, nah, goodbye. But this was the episode where we finally get the idea that they do care about each other.
Well, and that's why I didn't understand. And she's talked about him that way before quite a few times. And that's why I never, like, what was she calling him, a psychopath at one point? And I don't know. To me, the doctor doesn't seem like the kind of person who wouldn't love her. So that's why those lines always throw me off. And I don't know. He's never corrected her.
Until now.
Yeah. And he really didn't even say anything. So.
Nope. I will strongly disagree with you. After she says that line. And then she starts to realize. And he says, hello, sweetie.
Yes, but we go back into it's unspoken for him. And to me, the way he's portraying it is kind of like he shouldn't have to say that. She should know it.
Right. But the fact that he used her line.
Yeah.
He won't use the words. The same thing as with Rose.
Yeah,
Tyler.
I know. He just can't get him to say it.
And I think part of it is if he does actually say it, it does kind of shift the character somewhat.
Yeah.
You want that ambiguity. But for me, him saying, hello, sweetie, is the same as him saying, no, 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 you're wrong. I've always loved you.
Yeah.
And what great acting job by both of them. All of the chemistry that was missing between Jenna Coleman and Peter Capaldi was there in this episode.
I know, and I was kind of disappointed about that. I like River as her own character, but I've never really liked her with the doctor because it always seemed like she knew more than him and she was being a know-it-all, and then Matt Smith would just sputter and spin in circles, and it just broke me to think that he never stood up to her. He never, I don't know. So then this doctor, I mean, was right on par with her. It was great. And I wish that we would see more of River with 12 because I think that I would like her better.
The other thing to remember with that dynamic is we are now at the point where she knows very little and he knows everything.
Yes.
Whereas before that was reversed. And I think one of the reasons they did that was, like you said, it's one of the characters that can have the doctor kind of sputtering and flabbergasted and confused and taking him out of his element and doing the fish out of water thing. Because one of the things about the doctor is no matter where he goes, he knows everything. It's very evident because I've been watching a lot of the early ones, and especially the first doctor. No matter where they go, oh, here, I know everything about this, and here's your history lesson.
Which is why River would have never worked as a companion, a full-time companion. But now I think that, I mean, you know, they're going to kill her off now, but she could be with this doctor, and now she's gone.
Well, they've hinted very strongly that this is the last time they're together.
Mm-hmm.
However, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, no fixed points in time.
Yeah.
Science fantasy, wave your hands. You know, the doctor was only supposed to have what? How many regenerations? And now he's got like infinite regenerations because of, you know, magic.
He said a thing happened. He told River a thing happened.
Yeah. Which is the same as in like, there was a story in Spider-Man where they got rid of the wedding. Where he had been married to Mary Jane and they'd wanted to get rid of that for over two decades. And finally they did it with a story that pissed a lot of people off. And the editor was being asked all of these questions. And finally he just said, look, it's magic. We don't have to explain it.
There you go.
And with Doctor Who, when they write themselves into a corner, it's magic. We don't have to explain it.
Yes.
We're talking, what? We've got now, I think officially this Doctor has been the Doctor for over 200 years.
Oh, that we know of.
Yes, they said that early on. So, okay. Well, we could drop whatever we want to in there for, again, novels and books and comics and radio plays and crossovers and whatnot and hootie-hoo and all. The previous season, you gave a thumbs in the middle to. And had no nice things to say about Stephen Moffat as a showrunner. What is your verdict on season 9 of Doctor Who?
I really enjoyed season 9. I think, I don't know, I saw Peter Capaldi as the Doctor in this one. More so than the last one.
You still don't think he's mean, right?
No, he's less mean in this one, and his meanness was actually funny. So, I can deal with it when it's like that. I like that. I like the grouchiness.
Yes.
Not the outright malice.
I think one of the things that they've done very subtly is the Doctor started as being very owly.
Yeah.
And now he's sort of, because he's been around, he's become his own man. And he's still got the rough edges that make the character interesting. But now you can see kind of the soft underbelly that he hides.
Yes. Which is, I think, why I liked the Christmas episode so much. He was hysterical the entire episode.
He and River both, there was so much comedy in it without destroying the story.
Yeah. When he went into the TARDIS, I lost it.
Yeah, that whole sequence of him pretending he didn't know what was going on, that was probably one of my favorite sequences in the entire season.
Yeah, me too.
Because it showed his playfulness. Mm-hmm. That, even back last season with the Robin Hood episode, he's a playful doctor who likes messing with people.
Yes.
But they never did get away from the fact that he has no problem being violent or threatening violence. When Matt Smith would attempt to be a tough guy, you'd just go, no.
Well, no. He had his moments where, to me, when he was threatening people, he just seemed tired.
Yes.
And I liked that about 11. I think that he did that well.
I never bought him when he did that, though.
Oh.
It was almost like a kid playing tough. Whereas Peter Capaldi, when he says, I will do whatever it takes to destroy you, you're sitting there going, holy shit.
Yes, but I'm trying to think. Has he actually followed through on a threat? Or has he needed to at this
point?
He
has not needed to.
Okay. So I was going to say, the one thing that 11...
He did take down the gods of the fake gods pretty well. And got the Vorgons to kind of shut up and do what he said.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's actually had to do anything that has shocked me yet.
Right.
Matt Smith, I think the one thing that he did, the way he dealt with the silence, I thought was pretty brutal, and I'm still not over that. I don't know if I can ever get over him turning the human race into murderers.
Yeah.
That was a little, I wasn't happy with that. And I know 10's done some scary shit.
Well, 10 was the War Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk about the War Doctor, but nope. David Tennant's the one who became the scariest of doctors in that, to the point where River Song told him, you're changing the meaning of the word doctor. which I thought was just a brilliant way to use the fact that of his name. Oh, it's not that he calls himself the Doctor because of human doctors. It's no, human doctors call themselves that because of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the problems you have with an ongoing series like this is that tendency to keep raising the stakes. And as you keep raising the stakes, your protagonist has to become more and more powerful. Whereas I think the best Doctor Who stories are when the Doctor doesn't really seem like he knows what he's doing, but he pulls it out in the end.
Yes. I would agree with that.
Much like the my favorite episode, the one in the castle, where you feel like he doesn't know what's going on until the end, where you see, you actually watch all the pieces fall into place and you go, oh, okay, he may not have known the whole time, but he knows what he's doing. Have you watched the new episode of Sherlock?
No, I haven't.
Stay. Then we won't talk about it.
Okay.
It was the bridge between season 3 and the hopefully someday season 4.
Mm.
And it was very, very full of Stephen Moffat.
Mm. So other women dressed as dominatrixes and all of this.
There is a woman, there's a woman posing as a man in the 1800s.
Oh. Oh, the 1800s are there. Yes.
Yes.
That's
this is the one
Stephen
where
Moffat.
It's in the 18. It's set during the original time of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yes. All right. Well, I want to thank you for sitting down and talking Doctor Who with me again. We'll do it again next year. And any speculation on what sort of companion you would like to see next season?
Oh, I've been trying to think about this, and I don't know, because part of me thinks that 12 could do a pretty good job on his own for a little bit.
I think that would go over worse than the Sonic sunglasses.
I know, but I think he could hold his own. I think it's time for a male companion, quite honestly.
I agree. I think a male companion would be good. I, of course, have my dream companion I would love to see back, but I don't think it'll ever happen.
Which was?
Ramona.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would be wonderful, even if just, you know, a couple episodes, and, you know, Ramona's a Time Lord. Maybe she's
well, now
come
that
back.
Gallifrey's back, I don't see why not.
Yeah. And we have learned that you can switch male to female, because that's what happened to the head of the Time Lords.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm hoping for is that we get a companion in a way like Rose, in that they've got this rich life outside, so that they're a fully formed character, but I want them not to be a young British girl.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I was hoping that maybe we'll get a male companion, and I don't know, maybe not from our time period.
That would be nice, too, because we did, we have had, gosh, what was her name? Who was the cave woman? Leela?
Yes.
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 And Captain Jack, I never quite figured out what time period he was from when he was a companion.
Well, I think he was originally from the future, and then he got dropped off, and then it just sort of, we never know with Jack.
And because we're probably not going to get another series of Torchwood, why not have him come back?
Oh, because he's on Arrow.
So what?
Oh, I think John Barrowman would do it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the things that it's one of the things that I haven't liked about when Torchwood spun off. It's we haven't seen Captain Jack at all. And it was nice when he would just drop in once in a while.
Yeah. Although I'm still angry with him over Children of Earth. I don't know. That was not Doctor approved.
Well, of course not. No, it was on Stars.
He's gonna need to answer some questions.
Yes. Well, again, thank you for coming on. And as I said, we'll do it again next year. And there it is, another season of Doctor Who in the books and another episode of Solitaire Rose Radio in the books. One of the things we have that we share with Crazy Comics and Stories and all the podcasts I do is sponsors. And here they are. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly. And your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world. And remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right. Those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors. Want to thank everybody for listening. Want to thank everybody for telling people about the show. We are experiencing growth. If you would like to help us grow, just share the podcast with people you know. Let them know. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Instagram. Share it everywhere. Just let everybody know about the show. Got a lot coming up over the next few months. We will be making appearances. That's right. We will be at MSP Comic Con. And Joe talks about it all the time, but we will be setting up at MSP Comic Con. We will be having live broadcasts. We'll be having special broadcasts. We'll be having special episodes. We'll be having special interviews. We will even be on Periscope. We're going to be hitting that convention like you can't believe. There will be other convention appearances this year. That's right. We're going to be making live appearances. So stay tuned for announcements. If you would like us to show up at your convention, go ahead, email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. That's right. We're ready to start making con appearances. We've got a lot of big stuff planned for the coming year. We'd love it if you would join us, make the show bigger, make the show healthier, and I'll be back with more stories.